lot of times when loss happens, what many people do is like this armoring of the heart. So like, we don't want to feel bad. So what do? We are like, I'm gonna protect this. I'm got my hand on my heart right now. But this is not just protecting us from feeling bad, but it's numbing from all feelings, including joy.
Grief. It's one of those things we don't associate with joy. It's hard, it's heavy, it's uncomfortable. And yet in 2020, a lot of us are grieving a lot of things, which is why I'm really excited for today's guest. Libby Carstensen literally specializes in helping people find joy through grief. Libby's an executive and life coach, and she's also a meditation and mindfulness teacher who specializes in grief and loss. She's been a master educator at Chopra, as in Deepak Chopra's center. She also teaches an amazing Kundalini yoga class every morning, available for everyone on Instagram, which we talk about towards the end of this episode. And she teaches by the motto, don't just feel better, get better at feeling. So on today's show, Libby and I talk about where grief comes from and how to recognize it. We also talk about how to approach grief in different ways, including why we shouldn't minimize our feelings. We also discuss how we can bring about joy as we go through grief, and how things like Kundalini, movement, breath and body work, and nature can help. I really enjoyed this episode. I hope you listen to the end. Libby Carstensen, welcome to Vitamin Joy.
It is such an honor and a pleasure to be here.
Grief and joy. You're like a grief expert, but like how can grief and joy go together? Is it possible first?
In my experience, yes. And let me explain. So grief, for example, is typically when we're grieving something that is from the past. So there's this like reflection. Joy, in my experience, you can only have in the present. Mm. And what happened for me is that by experiencing grief and really looking at, like, the thing too is grief is actually an indication that you've lost something that you love. And first of all, it's positive that you have the capacity to love. And then through that, it's brought me into this presence of being in a state of joy.
What are some ways that we grieve? Everybody here is probably grieving something. Like, mm-hmm. maybe it's just with COVID-19, a lot of things have been interrupted. I know that's talked about a lot right now. But what are some of the ways we grieve that we don't expect?
That's a really good question, because one of the things that I'm really passionate about is opening people up to the idea that it's not just death. You know, up until when my dad died, and this was about 4 years ago, I thought grief was what happened when someone we loved died. And what I found is that we can grieve our unmet hopes, dreams, and expectations for our life. We can grieve the change in our daily routines. We can grieve relationships that didn't work out the way that we wanted them to, jobs. And when we start to acknowledge kind of some of these unmet hopes, dreams, and expectations for our life, like all of that actually takes up very precious mental real estate, not only in the mind, but in the body. And it wasn't until my dad died that I realized not only was I grieving the relationship that we never had, but it was all these other little losses along the way that I didn't give myself permission to grieve, because I either A, invalidate it, like, oh, it's not that big of a deal, or I minimized my feeling. So that is really my mission, is to say, like, to first of all, give ourselves permission to grieve. And then anything that we wished out turned differently is an example of a loss. And we only grieve things and particular losses that we deem emotional. Does that make sense?
There's a lot there. This is really good, though. It's really helpful. You know, what are some of the ways then? So if grief is the absence of something that we really loved or mm-hmm. wanted to have happened, how do we grieve better? And maybe I'm stepping ahead. And my guess is the first thing is you just recognize it, which is not always easy to do.
You know what? I want to go one step before recognize, because, and this is what I teach, is where did you learn to grieve? Because this also comes to our capacity to feel. And what I find a lot of times, like, for example, when you said, like, can we, like, grief and joy, do they go together? I say absolutely. Because a lot of times when loss happens, what many people do is like this armoring of the heart. So like, we don't want to feel bad. So what do? We are like, I'm going to protect this. I'm got my hand on my heart right now. But this is not just protecting us from feeling bad, but it's numbing from all feelings, including joy.
Okay. So when you had said earlier, you also talked about grief isn't just emotional, but you feel it in the body. So before we talk about grieving better more, what does that mean?
So this is, especially here in the West, I think we approach loss from a problem that we've got to fix. And what do? We fix it with our heads. But this isn't a head problem. This is a heart problem. So when, first of all, there's a recognizing there's a loss, is there's sometimes this disbelief. And that's because of a response from the brain being flooded with all these neural chemicals that I want you to think back to a recent loss. Your capacity to be in the present, to follow through on things, maybe your sleep was disrupted, your digestion, energy levels fluctuating. So this is not just a head thing. This is a full body thing. And what sometimes loss can do is it can trigger, talking about big T trauma or little T trauma. And so things start to circulate and to move into the body. So I always say, I approach it from when you experience a loss and then there's this experiencing of grief, is there's this window of opportunity not to just address what's happening right now, but all of the other little losses along the way that perhaps you didn't give yourself permission to grieve.
This is a lot. So I'm just taking a second to process it. So the first step is to think about how we were taught to grieve.
Yeah.
But then what if we were taught to grieve in a way that wasn't really beneficial, or we don't even know if it was beneficial or not?
So this is the first question I ask is, you know, tell me, how did you deal with loss, you know, growing up? How did your parents approach loss? What did you learn about grief? And if we can really acknowledge how we've learned to deal with loss, which is essentially change we didn't ask for, that can really give us some good information as to how we're navigating currently.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I guess I got really lucky there because my mom was a grief counselor. And when I lost my dad when I was young, we had no choice but to like deal with it. But there are other things that have been hard for me. And I'm sure people listening right now know, whether it's a dog that you lost or a breakup or you lost that time that normally your kid would be at school and now they're not.
Yeah.
Or your job. Or I'm sure there's a million examples you have that maybe I'm not thinking about.
Those are some good ones, and those are definitely up for people right now. And you were fortunate because the way that you learned about navigating loss and grief, in the way, you know, that your mom guided you. My experience was, just for example, it's something we just didn't talk about. It's like, you know, go to your room, close your door, and when you're done feeling whatever it is you're feeling, come out. So for example, my parents left me a voicemail that my aunt had died. I got a text when my cat of like 17 years, they were taking him to the vet to get put down. And I was like, who does that?
I'm glad we can laugh about it now, but that's not, I think a lot of people are taught like,
well, it felt very transactional. So I think, you know, there's kind of this unwinding too of our beliefs around what loss looks like, how we approach change, because how often do you really sit down and feel like, okay, I'm going to prepare myself for loss. Like, okay, I want to be prepared when change happens. We don't do that. We're so focused on acquiring that, and we're taught how to acquire things, but not at all what to do when we lose them.
Yeah, that's so true. We are taught, and that's a really good point. We're taught to acquire things, but we are not taught what to do. So how do we grieve better and we're going to get to the fun part, you know, to have more joy.
For me, grief is fun.
Oh my God, you're crazy. Livvy is like smiling. If you can see her right now, she is smiling. But she is, I think when you become good at probably helping others navigate this really hard thing, it has to be really joyful. So I can see that.
Yeah. And the reason why it does bring me a lot of joy is because I didn't realize how much I wasn't living until I had the opportunity to take a look at, again, this armoring of the heart. You know, my response to change I didn't ask for was usually the freeze response with the nervous system. So I would just numb myself out. So to grieve better, you know, not only taking a look at, okay, what was I taught or what do I believe about navigating change, you know, that I didn't ask for and loss, and then acknowledging. So this simple act of really acknowledging and validating that there's something here that was lost, there's something that I cared about. It's so powerful. And we are in this culture of don't feel bad. So the toxic positivity. So I see a lot now with clients, especially in the time of stay at home, shelter in place, COVID-19, is that we tell ourselves like, it's not that bad, at least I have. And so there's this minimizing of the feelings, but there's an actual loss there. So the first step is acknowledge. And then the second one is give yourself permission to feel what you're feeling. Just even that piece. There's brain scans that show the emotionally reactive parts of the brain start to calm down when you actually pay attention, you know, and acknowledge what you're feeling.
This is really interesting because I interviewed Dr. Edith Eger once, and she's a Holocaust survivor. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed her on Wild Ideas Worth Living, and she became like this world-renowned psychologist. And she'd survived the Holocaust herself. And she said, you know, one of her clients came to her and was really upset that the colored car of yellow that the client had ordered from La Jolla came in a different color, yellow. And she was so upset about it. And then she said, Edith, I'm so sorry. I know this is so dumb compared to like surviving the Holocaust and the trauma you've faced. And Edith was like, no, your pain is very real. And obviously the client Dr. Eger had been talking to had a lot more she was grieving about than the wrong yellow of her new car. But her grief needed to be validated. I think you just said something really interesting is one, don't minimize it. And I'm guessing with minimizing, comparison is a big one.
Yes. And have you heard, and you probably have because you are the host of Vitamin Joy, that comparison is the thief of joy.
The biggest thief of joy. I love that saying.
I believe that comparison is also the thief of feeling our feelings. Mm. Because how often throughout the past few months have you compared your situation to somebody else's and then decided it could be way worse?
Tons of times, like every time. I'm always nervous to say that I feel bad or I'm grieving something because somebody has it way worse always. I mm-hmm. think all of us listening are. Yeah.
And then you know, there's many different ways, you know, that we cope. Right? We cope with change we didn't ask for, with loss. But I really encourage, you know, I encourage you and everyone who's listening that just start to notice when you minimize your feelings or you get into the comparison, because this is the way that we don't live fully. This is the way that we actually limit the amount of joy that we can feel. We upper limit our capacity for joy.
So one of the things you said is how you handle your grief. And some people, you know, they have to put on a happy face. Or there's, mm-hmm. I never heard the word toxic positivity. It's kind of funny to me.
Google it. There's a lot there.
I understand. There is a lot there. So, but one of the things I learned is take action.
Yeah.
Like if something bad happens, you go do the work. And that's not always the most. So what do you say to people? Because I'm sure I'm not alone in this. Is like, if we lose something, we just get into action mode mm-hmm. to fix it. If you lose your job, get on that resume tomorrow. Break up with a dude, well, you go out the next night maybe, or I don't know.
So that is a really good example, because in there's a book I recommend called The Grief Recovery Handbook, The Grief Recovery Method Handbook, which talks a lot about some of the myths around grief. One of them is replace the loss, which is what many of us do. It's like, okay, this didn't work out, I'll just get another one. But the thing is, and I'm going to use pet loss, for example, is that and I remember losing a pet as a kid, and then the next day another pet appears. But my relationship, especially with death, it's like, while the physical relationship ends, the emotional relationship continues. So when we replace the loss, we'll keep in a place of feeling incomplete. And this is stuckness. So this is where stuck comes in, with feeling unresolved grief. So replacing the loss is just a band-aid. The just keep busy and stay strong. All of these are the ways that we're minimizing and invalidating our experience and reducing our capacity for joy.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about how grief can transform into joy, including where practices like Kundalini and getting into nature fit in. Hey friends, I've been talking to you about a company I love, founded in 1984 in my hometown of San Diego, that makes healthy products I grew up on. Cashi's the largest non-GMO project verified and USDA organic cereal company. They make products people love, from peanut butter Cashi Go cereal with 10 grams of plant-based protein, to Cashi by Kids cereal made with superfood ingredients, as well as waffles and so much more. As a company, Cashi believes food is not only a major unlock for positive health, but for positive lives and a healthy planet. They've pioneered programs like Certified Transitional, which supports farmers who are making the transition from conventional farming to organic. They also support fair trade programs like Fair Trade Chocolate and their Cashi Go chocolate cereal, which, by the way, is so yummy. Their bee policy makes sure bees, our pollinators, are around not just today, but tomorrow as well. They make eating well easy, and they've been doing it since 1984. Find out more at Kashi.com. That's Kashi.com. Hey friends, you obviously like podcasts if you're listening to this show. And if you want to start your own podcast, I have a class to help you get started, and we actually talk about the monetization part. That's the part no one was talking about when I started my first show, which I started in 2016, Wild Ideas Worth Living, which, by the way, I just sold to REI Co-op and still host. I also hosted a travel show for Lufthansa, the airline company, and I've consulted with dozens of other major companies on their podcasts and tons of individual podcasters just like you on how to start, grow, and monetize their shows. I have an on-demand class available now. It's called Start, Grow, and Monetize Your Podcast. It's only $97, and it's available on shelbystanger.com/courses for a limited time only. As someone who spent thousands of dollars learning how podcasting works and who built successful shows with almost zero social media presence in the beginning, people have told me they really enjoyed learning from someone who was actually like them and actually did it. I'll also be launching a multi-day intensive for podcasters this August, but I highly recommend starting with the on-demand class first. Just go to shelbystanger.com/courses to take the on-demand class and sign up at shelbystanger.com to get on the mailing list for the next one. So what do we do instead?
One. And I know. And for those of us that are like, give me the like 1-5-step plan, I will put it into place right now. This is not a head thing.
Yeah.
This is about getting better at feeling. So acknowledging, first of all, giving yourself permission to grieve and to feel and stay in the discomfort. So that's the other thing, is when you don't want to feel your feelings, what do? Drugs, sex, alcohol, work, Amazon Prime, Netflix.
Surfing. But that's not a bad thing. But sometimes, I guess, too much surfing is.
Here's the thing. Surfing, depending on the mindset, if you're headed out there to, again, this is where it's like the thinking of how we do one thing is how we do everything. Mm. So if the mindset is, I can't deal with this, I need to distract myself, then we're not moving in the direction of really experiencing the capacity and the gift that grief can really bring you.
That makes sense. I always have terrible surf sessions if I do that.
Yeah.
And the universe usually lets me know. Not to get all hippy dippy on you guys. Well, what are some other ways that we can find then joy through this process? Because not everything has to be fun. And that's not what I'm saying. But how does joy come out of this?
So speaking from my own experience, in a short period of time, my grandfather died. I was with him in hospice. My dad died 45 days later in an accident. And then about, I think, 6 to 9 months later, a job that I was in for 10 years, gone. And so the things that were really symbols to me of safety and security and familiarity were now pulverized. And I've heard this from many other grievers, that when you're in this place of what you know to be true is gone, there's a groundlessness that can really only be accessed in this way. And you have an opportunity to move through this window of change and transformation that is, in my experience, only offered in times like these. And so when you can see that, because I felt like that was, universe was knocking on my door several times before all of this happened. Apparently I needed the lesson loud and clear. I got it. The ability to feel at the depth and the joy that you and I have been talking about is, I can't even put it into words. It's like you move from sleepwalking to like, wow, I thought I was living, but now I'm really living. And then you move into living on purpose. So just like surfing, when you go out to surf, instead of it like, I need to avoid whatever I'm feeling, now there's this capacity to step in and ride the wave. Versus, well, what's the opposite of riding the wave?
Avoiding it and
getting pulverized.
Getting worked. So this is I really love this conversation, Libby. Thank you so much. It's a lot to process, and I'm sure for a lot of people listening, it's a lot to process. Are there common mistakes that people, I mean, it's kind of funny to say that, but is there common things that we do when we grieve that we can maybe swim a different way doing that might be make our process through grieving a little bit more gentle, or I don't even know the word, just make it a little easier for us?
Yeah.
Because no matter what, grief is, it's not easy always.
You know, I am a firm believer, and this is, again, I'm sharing this with you because I had the experiencing, so I know that this is true. So I know a lot of what I'm sharing with you and all of you are listening, it's like, it seems like an intellectual concept until you have the experiencing and then you're in this embodiment of what change like this feels like. I think the first piece is not comparing our journey to anybody else's. We all grieve and we all do it differently. Knowing that whatever you feel is natural and normal for you. I found for me after my losses that talk therapy actually it got me deeper into the story I had already been telling myself in therapy for 15 years. It just got louder. And I was like, how do I rewrite this narrative? So one of the things that we can really do is recognize that this isn't a head thing, this is a heart thing, and it's the whole body. Your body literally changes shape. For those of you, when you think about when you experienced a loss, like the body, you know, physically we look different. The body changes shape because the body knows. And so if we can do practices and self-care that can invite us back into the safety of our body. And so I did a lot of somatic experiencing. So working with the nervous system, this is where Kundalini as a practice came in for me, because I was so disassociated from feeling connected to my physical body that before I could even kind of take a look at the losses and what felt incomplete, I had to arrive safely at home in this body first. So self-care, like there's, and it's like, because we think that we need to solve it, getting out into nature, you know, to putting good nourishment into our bodies, recognizing that a glass of wine to take the edge off maybe does for a moment, but it's actually like adding kerosene to an already burning fire.
Makes you so depressed the next day. Yeah. I always regret. You never are like, oh, I'm so glad I had that extra glass of wine tonight.
I don't think I've ever said that.
No one says that. Yeah. Alcohol is a depressant.
I'm so glad I had that extra dessert. I'm so glad that I worked an extra 10 hours. I'm so glad that I ordered all of those things on Amazon Prime that I completely forgot about when they arrived at my door the next day.
I think that's probably a really good tip. Like, ask yourself if the next day you're going to say, oh, I'm so glad I did this. Yeah. Or not. If it's a hell yes, it's a no. If not a hell yes, it's a no. That's really interesting. You know, the body thing for me is really interesting because when I was a little girl, I found surfing shortly mm-hmm. after my father passed away. And it was the best thing for me because at the time I was really young. So it was really hard for me to understand concepts, but I understood what it felt like to be in water and to have to sit mm-hmm. and to have to sit in nature and kind of move my body in a certain way. And it was a way I could process things that I couldn't process on land.
Yeah.
So swimming, yoga, walking, there is something pretty powerful about doing it in nature. And I do want you to talk about, mm-hmm. one, the word somatic, and two, kundalini.
Yeah. Because
not everybody knows what kundalini means, even though it's a really fun word to say. Kundalini. I don't know. Sorry. I'm a little
kundalini.
Mature.
Kundalini.
It just sounds fun. It's like so many syllables.
Yeah. Kundalini.
But wait, body stuff. Like, first, yeah. Explain to me what does somatic mean? Because I keep trying to drop this word on Johnny and he's like, you don't even know what it means. Like, why are you using this word? And I keep trying to sound smart.
So I'll relate this to how I was led to this work. And so I'm a coach, I'm a meditation teacher, mindfulness, grief recovery. And I feel like the final frontier for me is the somatic coaching. And for me, in the work that I've done, and I was working cranial sacral therapist, and then doing somatic experiencing, is it helped me to widen my window of tolerance. And what I mean by that is any change, and even well before, you know, my dad died and my grandfather died, anytime there was a change, my body immediately interpreted it as a threat. So I would move into this agitated state, and it became really difficult for me to think, to work, and it was exhausting. And so I was like, in order for me to actually hold change, I need to really work on strengthening my nervous system, really widening my window of tolerance. So when things were uncomfortable or there was a certain level of uncertainty, I could actually stay versus disassociate from my body. Is this making sense?
I think so, because one of our first episodes of Vitamin Joy is with James Nestor, and he talks about breath practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing breath practice is a somatic. So what is the definition of somatic, though? Is it like of the body? Does soma mean body?
So yes.
Okay.
So body. So
I'm guessing.
Yes, you're very good. So and I want to give kind of some pieces that you can relate to, because you just talked about the breath. So with the nervous system, and this was the piece that was missing for me early on in my journey of grief and loss, the self-regulating practices. So I wasn't able to regulate my emotions, right? My energy was up and down. And one of the practices that I think is so vital and so imperative is the breath. So in Chinese medicine, the lungs hold grief.
Mm.
So this is why and when I'm talking to grievers, are like, I can't breathe. My chest feels so heavy. So the very simple practice that we start with is just long, deep breathing. And I say just because it can feel very painful and excruciating because of the heaviness of the heart and sadness. And so the breath is very much, I believe, how we breathe is how we grieve, and how we grieve is how we live. So just like and in Kundalini, there is a mantra, and actually a meditation I recommend, which is Kirtan Kriya. And it uses a mantra, Sa Ta Na Ma, which translates to birth, life, death, rebirth. So it's this cycle of change. So just like the breath, on the inhale. So there is the birth, the life of the breath. And then on the exhale, the death or change. And then right at the bottom, and when I've worked with people and we've been strengthening the nervous system, we'll work on the breath held out. In fact, that is like in many different practices, it's about the conquering of death, right? With the breath held out and being able to relax into that is also very, I think, it's symbolic of life. And that's why I just feel like how we breathe is how we live. So with joy, are you able to take in, you know, through the inhale breath? And at the same time, grief, are you able to let go completely with the exhale breath?
I love that.
Yeah.
James Nestor said on the podcast that we did about breathing that there's a lot of mantras that are exactly 5 seconds in, 5 seconds out. Mm-hmm. So if you breathe in 5 seconds and you can breathe out for 5 seconds, that's sort of a, I don't know, decent. But the body, so being in the body, whether it's through yoga or kundalini, there are different forms of whether it's walking. But why, I'm really curious about why kundalini. You know, for you, you're so Libby's a kundalini teacher, and at 7 a.m. most mornings you can go to @liberated and take her donation yoga class, and it's awesome. I mean, this girl taught for Deepak Chopra, that guy. And it's really cool. I feel myself. So I'm one of those people that would make fun of kundalini. It's a lot of sounds like you're having a really good time or having a baby breathing the breath of fire. But yeah, every time I've done it, I feel so good afterwards. And right, to the ladies, just so you know, I normally don't talk this much on the podcast, but if I'm ever having trouble getting my cycle, it like comes immediately after kundalini yoga. So like, there's something about feminine energy that it really evokes as well.
Yeah. So you did a wonderful job of, I think, inviting people to try kundalini. Kundalini, the yoga of awareness, the way that I got introduced to it is my normal practices, my meditation practice, my hatha yoga practice, none of it worked after my dad died. In fact, I remember being in a yoga class and just like not being able to do anything. Holding the poses was excruciating. It was like a war zone in my body. And then the same thing with meditation. I closed my eyes and I would have all of these just thoughts and visions and images of, you know, whether it was my father or my grandfather. And so these two things, yoga and meditation, that had been my safe places, they were like strangers. So I found kundalini, which I had, you know, kind of practiced on and off for the last 10 years. But then when I started practicing this time, something different happened. Building my capacity to stay in, say, a breath of fire practice for 7 or 11 minutes and staying within that discomfort and moving through that threshold and seeing what was on the other side. The first time I remember that happening, I felt like I had come back to my center. I started to feel strong in my body. I noticed that outside of being on the yoga mat, when there was uncertainty or change happened, I wasn't reacting in the same old way. I was actually able to pause and then respond. My sleep improved, my digestion improved, my hormones felt a lot more balanced than they had in years. And more importantly, I felt connected to my intuition for the first time in years.
That's so cool. And for you athletes, I ran really fast after a kundalini session recently. And I think it's probably because so much of the breath of fire helps oxygenate you. Mm-hmm. And you just feel really good.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. So movement. So kundalini has brought you some vitamin joy.
Yes, it has.
Where can people start if they want to learn kundalini?
Couple places. First of all, join me on Instagram @liberated for Rise and Radiate. And then there's actually, I don't know if you know this, but there's a Kriya called Breath of Joy. So literally Google Breath of Joy, Kundalini, you'll find it. So the breath, again, when we think of like the lungs in grief, so any breath practice is going to support you as you are grieving and moving through the process of navigating difficult emotions. Breath of joy is incredible. Kirtan Kriya, that I use the mantra Satanama, birth, life, death, rebirth. And then breath of fire. I call breath of fire kind of like the coconut oil of Kundalini, because, you know, coconut oil has like a million uses.
I love it.
Breath of fire, same thing. So it's, I always think of breath of fire as like clearing the cobwebs out. So you mentioned that you could run even faster. It's like how we breathe is how we live. Like at the end of your day, are you going to bed holding people, places, and things emotionally hostage for your feelings? Because that starts to accumulate. So it's like when we do these practices of just noticing, and this is one that I recommend before bed, is like just doing a quick, like, you know, recap of, if you're feeling angry, you're feeling resentful, who or what are you holding emotionally hostage for that? Nobody makes us feel a certain way. We choose to. Give yourself the opportunity to let that go so you can be free. And then the long, deep breathing. So notice when you're feeling angry and resentful or frustrated, what's happening in your breath?
Should you only do breath of fire in the morning, or is it something you can do before bed?
I've never done it before bed, but I personally think you can do it at any time of day. I'll do, instead of reaching for caffeine, I'll do like 1 to 3 minutes of breath of fire. This is something that if you're pregnant or on your cycle or maybe high blood pressure, you might, first of all, pregnant or on your cycle, you're going to skip breath of fire and do long, deep breathing. But it's very, restorative and at the same time detoxifying.
And what if you're a guy and you do it? Because I think a lot of people, I notice more women attracted to Kundalini, but there's a lot of guys that listen to this podcast.
Yeah. If you're a guy, you should be doing like 31 minutes of breath of fire a day.
I've noticed and I've heard it really improves your, you know, your libido.
Well,
I'm just going to say,
I told you coconut oil and breath.
Yes, coconut oil and cacao chocolate. Libby, this has been a joy. I think all of us are going to really start to recognize grief and, you know, maybe approach it in a little bit of different fashion. Maybe more of us will get into nature. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of us will start.
She's doing breath of fire.
Breath of fire. I'm really curious, though. Where do you, I mean, you're doing all these things right now. You're coaching. You have this Rise and Radiate Kundalini practice that you share with the world every morning. You know, where do you find your vitamin joy these days?
Nature. 100%. Nature for me, and it was also a coming home, just like I said, that groundlessness that you feel when there's a big catalyst that comes. Nature for me, you know, I spent some time in DC when I was in radio, and I was very disconnected then. So I didn't even notice like the cherry blossoms and all this beauty in DC. I kind of took for granted these wide open spaces growing up in Iowa. It wasn't until I went on a African safari to Kenya a couple years ago that I reconnected with nature in a way that left me absolutely speechless, changed every single cell in my body. And I was so concerned that when I got back home to California that I was going to lose that feeling, but it's never gone away. Every time I go back into nature, it's I feel this sense of support and being held that I guess I'm putting into words now, but it's indescribable. And it just, it reminds me of, again, that cycle of life. It's like just with the seasons, you know, the spring, summer, fall, and winter, and how we are an expression of nature. And so it reminds me of like, how can I even more easily and effortlessly flow through that? And then the joy in being in the present moment in nature is indescribable for me.
I love this. I love this interview. Libby, thank you so much for sharing your joy with all of us. You know, we usually give everybody a little vitamin joy challenge at the end. I'm guessing it's get in nature.
Get into nature. So since in Africa was like Kenya, I think it was maybe almost 2 years ago. No, like a year and a half. And since that time, every day for 30 minutes, I go out to nature sans technology, which it's interesting because the brain's like, wait, we need to check our phone. We need to do something.
Or and take
it's
a
like,
picture of it.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
So that would be my challenge. 30 minutes.
I love it. And now, Louie, where can people find more and take your Kundalini, rise and radiate every morning?
So you can find me on Instagram at Liberated with two B's. And that's how I hope you'll feel after we practice together. And then also the Grieve Better Together, which is an online course really offering support. So like-minded people. More information on that at liberated.com.
I took so much from this episode. First, to just stop minimizing our feelings, to stop comparing ourselves to other people, to places, and to things, to let go of our own stories when it just no longer serves us, and to be okay sitting through our grief, whatever that looks like, and to get into nature as much as possible. Oh yeah, and to also try some Breath of Fire, which Libby says is like the coconut oil for your whole being. Grief comes in many ways and many waves. And if you go through with it and you sit with it, I really do believe it can transform into some vitamin joy. Thank you again to Libby Carstensen for joining me for this episode. For the Vitamin Joy Challenge this week, try to recognize grief, take time to sit with it, and get into nature. I'll be doing that. I hope you do too. You can find more about Libby by going to her Instagram at Liberated. You can also check out her yoga classes every morning at 7 a.m. Pacific time at Liberated, and try Kundalini if you haven't tried it. You can also go to her website at libbyyc.com, where she's a lot of resources on grief and classes you can take to work through grief to get more joy. This podcast is produced by Starburn Audio and edited by the amazing Mackenzie Mizell. Our sponsor is Cashy, who makes eating well easy. They support us. I hope you as a listener will choose to support them. To all of you who've written me reviews, they are so kind. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. If you have 2 minutes to go subscribe to the podcast and log into Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen, and you can write a review, I would greatly appreciate it. This show is a labor of love. These reviews help other people see the podcast and help it grow. With that, I hope you all have a wonderful week, and don't forget to dose yourself with some vitamin joy.